But you reminded me to turn the sound off. Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
I'd like to welcome you to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David, and I am an alcoholic. For those of you who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome on the first floor of this house. Please do not go upstairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And tonight we're doing the second half of step 12. And just by way of an announcement, next Monday is Christmas Eve. A week from next Monday is New Year's Eve. And we will be meeting on those nights, step one, part one, step one, part two. So we're going to keep rolling right along with the steps all through the holidays. So tonight is step one, or step 12, part two. I'm going to turn the meeting over to Graham.
Hi, everyone. I'm Graham. I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the meeting tonight. And I just wanted to let you all know that next week David and I are going to be doing it, and then it will just be, and then our new speaker, Miss Judy, will start to come into the mix as well. And that's one of the principles of AA, isn't it? That spirit of rotation. So we're very excited about that. We're sure that she's going to blow your socks off. And anyway, so tonight we're going to be talking about step 12. David and I started this meeting in his house a few months ago just to try to carry the simple message of AA. We sort of tired of going to big book study meetings where everybody's trying to one-up each other on their big book knowledge and all that. You know, I know more than you. And that sort of got old, and we really thought, you know, what is it we're really doing here? Let's really try and get to the simplicity of the AA steps and how they can change our lives. So that's what we're trying to do, and we're glad that you're all here. We're not experts in the AA big book. We're just here trying to carry this simple message. So we had talked about the first 11 steps really being a preparation for the 12th step, and how a lot of times both of us, myself included, I'll just speak for me, have got wrapped up in the steps and intellectually trying to take the steps to fix myself and make myself feel better. And just to be constantly reminded that that, for me, is really missing the point. The point is, I'm never, ever, ever going to be perfect. And that's a big bummer when you're a perfectionist like me. The realization, the painful realization that it's just not happening in this lifetime. So here we are, imperfect, flawed, doing stuff I shouldn't do, not doing stuff I should do. That doesn't mean I can't help people. It doesn't mean I can't help people right now, at this moment, today. And that's really the spirit of step 12, is this idea that regardless of what's going on in my life, regardless of how messed up I may be, I can still be of use to other people. And that is what's going to help me more than anything else. So anyway, let's read the book. So step 12 is, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So we're going to kick off on page 96, right in the middle there with the word suppose. Suppose now you're making your second visit to a man. He has read this volume and says he's prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know you are available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story, but do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. Last week we talked a lot about meeting the new guy for the first time. And, you know, I think the skinny on that for me is, I just want to establish, is this guy really an alcoholic? Because if he's not an alcoholic, then I'm not really going to be of much use to him. And I actually had an occasion on the way here last week. I had the guy in the car with me. I went and picked him up and I brought him to the meeting. And in the course of the journey in the car, it became clear, based on our conversation, that the guy's not an alcoholic. He can drink alcohol and have one or two and just leave it. And he can do that consistently. And that's something that I'm not able to do. Generally, once I start drinking, I just keep drinking like a big greedy pig. I can't get enough of this stuff. I love it. It makes me feel so wonderful. And then I say, I'm not going to do that again. And then I do it again. This guy didn't have that experience. So I tried to be friendly and nice to him. But the bottom line is, I can't really be of any help to that guy in terms of being a sponsor or taking him through the steps. He's got a problem with cocaine, crack, and heroin. You know, so those guys over at NA can probably help him. So that's what we're trying to do, is clarify, is this guy actually, does he have alcoholism? And then we're ready on the second visit to talk to him about that. And what I tried to do is just get the guy to arrange to meet me at Starbucks. And then I really just give him a list of simple actions that I take, that I try to take consistently. And is he willing to do that? I think it's interesting to read the step. We try to carry this message, practice these principles. What's the message? What is the message? Am I clear on what the message is? The message is, when I drink, I can't guarantee my behavior. I can't control how much I drink. And on my own, I can't stay stopped. And since I came to AA and took these simple actions, I've been able to stay stopped one day at a time and live reasonably comfortably in my skin most of the time. And when life gets rough, when adversity comes, I'm able to walk through it without drinking and without acting like a huge lunatic most of the time. That's really the message. And the way to get from the drunkenness to the sobriety is through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, participation in a home group, going to some meetings regularly, saying some simple prayers, and trying to get out of myself by helping people. That's the simple message as I understand it. That's been the message that was carried to me and shown to me. And that's what I try to do myself imperfectly. So it's very clear when I'm meeting with this guy, I'm not just meeting to talk. How you feeling, buddy? How you feeling, bud? Did you see the game last night? Awesome. Are you kidding me? This is an illness. That's like going to your doctor, right? And maybe you've got diabetes and you go in to see the doctor and the doctor's like, how you doing, bud? See the game last night? And you're sitting there and you're waiting for him to start doing some diagnosis and he just keeps talking about the game and he's like, high five, champ, see you next time. And you're like, huh? And then you die. Yeah? Are you kidding me? That doctor would get a bad reputation around town. So am I going to do that to someone in AA? The guy's given up his time to meet me, and I've given up my time. And I, as you know, I'm a big deal. I'm very busy. So I'm giving up my time to go meet this guy, and now I'm not even going to tell him about the message of Alcoholics Anonymous that might save his life, like it saved mine. I'm just going to waste time on small talk. So I think it's very important to get right down to it. Okay, we're going to do the steps. Let's talk about step one. And, you know, we have the book, but I'm not going to read the guy to death. That's another one that we've seen a lot of lately. These guys are like, okay, I'm your sponsor, and you're going to meet me every week. And we're going to read one paragraph of the big book. Like there's some big mystery. It's like, ooh, one paragraph, and we'll spend like 2 weeks on it. Wow. And I sponsored this guy one time, and he'd met with his sponsor like every week for a year, and they'd read one paragraph, and he never even got to step four. Are you kidding me? So I don't know what that's all about. Are we going to worship a book now? Come on. This is describing the simple actions that I need to take to recover from the illness of alcoholism. Why am I not transmitting that to the new guy? Why am I getting all caught up in ritual? Why are we making stuff up to complicate this? This is very, very simple set of actions. And it's my job as a sponsor to transmit those actions to the new guy. And it's a serious job. We can have fun doing it, but that's my job. So, and I think if you do that, you can get the new guy up to step nine in a few months. You know, maybe 1 or 2 months, depending how fast he goes. It's not really a big deal. So anyway, that's just me on the soapbox there. But the bottom line is, I've done this, and I can give the guy practical advice. All I can share is my experience. If you want to do a paragraph a week, that's cool. But you're not doing it with me. You know, you'll find somebody that will do that. And then it says, you know, basically to offer the guy sponsorship, but don't insist upon it. And I love this thing about AA, you know. It's like, I used to get really possessive of new people. I'd be like, this new guy's mine. You know what I mean? And then, like, Iran would come over and try and talk to him, and I'd be like, yeah, you don't want to talk to that guy, Iran. You know what I mean? You don't want to talk to Greg, watch out for him. And the guy was mine, and I'd be very jealously possessive of him and his time. And that becomes very painful after a while. So now, you know, I think this is probably for him too. And but now, what I really believe now and what I see happening is that this is all about people having a group experience. And I don't know if I'm the right guy for that guy or whatever. But what I do know is I can be friendly and helpful to him and try to get him to meet as many other guys in AA as possible, as fast as possible, so he can have his own experience. And maybe it is going to be me that's the sponsor, maybe it's not. It doesn't matter. The point is that you get help. It doesn't matter if it's me that's doing it, because we know it's not the individual that's doing it anyway. It's we together. It's the power greater than us. So that's very freeing, you know, just to be able to do that. And there's a lot of people in AA that are so disposed that they can give a lot of their time to this work. And I used to be in that state when I was single and didn't have any kids. I could go to 7 meetings a week and spend all weekend doing AA. Anytime I wasn't at work, I could be doing AA. And I used to do that sometimes. My present circumstances, not so much, you know. But what I find is that there's other people that are, if I say, you know, I've got a new guy, I can't go to a meeting tonight, I'm watching the kids or whatever, but like, I'll take them. And that's the wonderful thing about AA. We can all do what we can do to help people.
Yeah, one of the phrases that Graham used, I talk to him just about every day on the phone, you know, about what's going on in life and pursuit of happiness and so forth. I'm keeping you up. And but we were kind of getting off track on something, and he said, well, let's just keep the ball on the deck and focus on, you know, the primary purpose. And in a rare moment of humility, I said, you know, I think I know what you mean by that, but tell me what you mean by that. And coming from a European culture where soccer was the main game, it's a typical soccer coach admonishment to the team. If the ball is flying around all over the stadium, then we are not going to accomplish our mission on this field. If we keep the ball on the ground, we can control it. We can advance it. We can keep the ball on the deck. And that phrase has popped up in my mind and in several conversations since then. And the reason I mention all that is because this particular paragraph seems to put the ball on the deck very nicely. Where it talks about we're meeting the second visit to the man, it sort of presumes that I've handed him a book and said, read this, and then we'll meet again. I'll tell you that I've never, ever done that. That's not my experience. But it basically says that is the man prepared to go through with the 12 steps? That's a fair question. So that kind of gives a hint at what our relationship is. We're gonna go through the steps together. And as Graham suggested, there are many ways to do that. And I had the experience of sponsoring several people. Some of them are still sober. but I was always uncomfortable sponsoring anybody in any way other than the way that I was sponsored. And then I had a guy ask me to sponsor him one time, and at the very first meeting, he said, "I chose you to be my sponsor because I want to have the experience of going through that book line by line and sharing experience, strength, and hope." And I said, "Well, I mean, if you want to have that experience with me, I'm open to that. I just think it's fair to tell you that nobody's ever done that with me, you know, that I don't have that experience." And that was the truth. He accepted that. And we moved a little more quickly than a paragraph a week. I think we were clipping through it about a chapter a week, something like that. But I think we were up on a fourth step within 8 weeks or something like that. But it just basically points to what we're doing. We're going to work the steps. I haven't had the experience myself. That's a good thing to check. Have I had the experience? Am I doing the steps? Am I currently having an experience with the steps? Do I have a sponsor? That's a great question to ask. And then let him know that you're available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story, which I love that, because all through the book and in some of the stories afterward, like the man on the bed, that seemed to be basically what these guys were doing when they 12-stepped somebody. They would just sit down and tell them what happened, what it was like, and what it's like now. We just tell our stories, and that seems to reconcile with what's in the literature. So we do kind of tend to drift off and invited to be marriage counselors and financial analysts and psychiatrists, and I've had my time fancying myself as being all of those things, you know. I had a guy one time, he was just talking, and I'm steady telling him what he needs to do. Well, you got to call that. You got to call the insurance company, of course. There's a grace period, you know. And finally, he got so frustrated with me. He said, "Dave, I just really wanted to tell somebody what was going on. I'm a grown man. I don't really need anybody to solve my problems for me." I was so embarrassed, you know. That's one of the guys who's still sober today. But he told me to shut up. But basically, the stage is set here. What we're doing together is we're going to work the steps. And I told this story last week, but I'm going to tell it again because it was really significant. It changed the way that I listen in meetings. It changed the way I act before the meeting and after the meeting. It changed my recovery. But just this simple idea, as I'm meeting and interviewing this guy that I've picked out of the herd and decided that he's worthy to be my sponsor. That takes a while if you're a guy like me. And there we are at Starbucks, and I'm just prattling on about my life and my wife and the money and the honey and the and she and this and that and they, and you cut me off. I said, "Yeah, AA is full of guys like you. You're suffering from untreated alcoholism. What's your relationship with your home group like? Do you have a home group?" And I sat up because I knew the answer to that. I said, "Why, yes, I do." He said, "That's great. What are you doing for them?" "Oh, well, I show up most of the time. I got a babysitter. I need a babysitter. I'm a single parent. You see, it's really tough for me to show up. If the babysitter, I can't really take a commitment, you know." "So you mean to tell me that you can't take a coffee commitment because your babysitter might not show up?" And I was like, "Oh, that's right." Said, "Wait a minute, let me just back up. You mean to say that if you took a coffee commitment and your babysitter didn't show up, you couldn't pack up your kids, go over there, put on a pot of coffee for the meeting, get it all set up for everybody, and take your kids out so that everybody can have coffee for the meeting?" "Well, I suppose I could do that." You know, it hadn't occurred to me. It wasn't even malice. It wasn't even part of it. So he said, basically, we're gonna work through these steps. And we're going to move through them quickly so that we can have that experience and get on with the business of helping other people, because that's why we're here. And I swear, I had never heard that before. That's why we're here. I really spent an extended period of time in Alcoholics Anonymous thinking that you guys were here to make me feel better. So this idea that what you can do, no matter who you are, no matter how much sobriety you have, we can greet people at the door and we can share our stories. My sponsor today, the man that I work with today, tells me the only thing that I have of any value at all is my experience, strength, and hope. And I'm free to share that. If anybody wants your advice, David, they'll ask for it. I'm still waiting.
Thanks. So we're going to go to page 98. It's the first full paragraph. It's not the matter. Page 98. It's not the matter of giving that's in question, but when and how to give. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamours for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense! Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence upon God. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. It's a very uncomfortable paragraph. Seems to suggest that there is something called God and I need it. So I really like this part about giving, you know, because when I first came into AA, I had some outstanding characteristics, defiance, argumentative with people. But another one was I was a tremendous people pleaser. And really what runs through that is I need everybody to like me. You know, it's a room full of people. There's one guy who doesn't like me. I forget about all the people that I think do like me and I focus on that guy and try to get him to like me. I want his approval. For some reason, that's really, really, really important to me. It used to be much more important to me than it is now. So that, when I'm now supposed to be helping people to stay sober myself, resulted in me getting burned a lot of times and experiencing a lot of resentment toward the new people. Because I got confused about what really giving I was supposed to be doing, and I put my work on a service plane, a social service plane. So I'm letting homeless guys stay at my apartment. I wasn't married and didn't have kids at the time, but you know, I'm taking guys in. And they're doing what people like me do in that situation. They're ripping me off for everything they can get. And then I'm mad at them. But I have to tell you, I really, really enjoy parading them at the AA meeting. Look, this guy's homeless, he's staying with me. Yeah. I'm spiritual and good. And so I love that, right? But I don't like the rest of it when the guy's stealing from me. And And that's funny and everything, but the book goes on to say that if I'm actually doing that to people, then I'm actually harming them. I'm harming them now. So I'm so selfish that I want to be seen to be helping everybody, and now I'm actually harming the guy because I'm making it possible for him to be insincere. So he's going to say whatever he can because now he has to please me to keep a roof over his head. Now he has to please me to keep the 20s coming. Now he has to please me to keep his belly full. So say anything. And that's really important that I recognize that. So I sort of came to this, my present level of being willing to help people, I suppose, through a lot of pain of dealing with people just like me. And there's a beautiful irony in AA, because in order to stay sober, I have to devote a significant amount of my time to being around people who are just like me. When I was in the worst of my alcoholism, I have to spend time with those guys. And if I allow them to, they'll use me up and throw me away. So I started to realize that. But it was only the resentment of being treated like that that taught me that. One instance that sticks in my mind, I know I've shared this with you guys before. This guy was living with me for a while and he just wasn't serious about staying sober. He just wanted, his ass was on fire and he just wanted to get out of the heat for a while. So to cut a long story short, I had to throw him out of my house. And I go to a meeting one night and he's there. And he's sitting there and he's smiling and he's waving at me. And on his head is a beautiful hat that my aunt got. got me for Christmas. And he's like, hi Graham, and this hat's there. And it's snowing outside and I don't have a hat. And I don't think I said anything to him. I'm just like, hi, I'm going to kill that guy. So some experiences like that. But anyway, and I do find this, you know, when it's a really, really bad sign if I get one of these guys to come with me to Starbucks and he starts telling me, oh, if I lose my job or I need to get a job or I'm joining a gym, I'm going to stop smoking, I'm going to college, I'm going to run a marathon, and I'm getting a new job and I'm starting a new relationship. And I'm like, well, why are you sitting here with me? Because I thought we were going to do AA and you could sort of get sober, you know? So it's very interesting to me that when I'm in that situation and my life's burned to the ground again, rather than getting sober, suddenly it's like, now it's time to go to college again. You know, because that's really going to work out, right? Like the other three times I went to college and dropped out because I was getting drunk again. So it's very important, I think, for me to be clear about what the focus is here. The focus is to take the steps and to get active in Alcoholics Anonymous. I love this bit when it says nonsense, you know, and it really is nonsense. And that goes as much for me today in my life, you know. It has to be all right if this all goes. It has to be okay if my marriage ends, if my children go, if my job goes, if the house goes, the car, all of that stuff that I love. If that all goes, it has to be okay. That's not an excuse to get drunk. There's no excuses to get drunk. Drinking doesn't make anything better. But that has to be okay with me. And I'm hopeful that if that stuff did happen, I would be able to walk through it sober by continuing to take these simple actions. And, you know, when I see this dependence on God, it says, we don't stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence on God. And this really gets to the heart of what we're talking about. My job is to help people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's really what helps me to stay sober more than anything else. But in my mind, I came here, and I still come here at times to get fixed and helped by the people here. It doesn't seem to work that way. And as an atheist, when I came to AA, the dependence on God, I have no idea what that means. And that's the wonderful thing about the simple actions of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I know what they are. So you talk to me about dependence on God, I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about, I don't believe in God. And they're like, that's okay. Can you depend on the simple actions of Alcoholics Anonymous? And I'm like, okay, so go to meetings, say some simple prayers, get a sponsor, take the steps, join a home group, participate in a home group. I can do that. I can depend on that. And over years, that dependence on those simple actions has, my faith in that is very strong now. I really believe that that's going to work no matter what happens. Because anybody in here who's been alive for some time has gone through some adversity, whether they were drunk when it happened or whether they were sober, whether I created it myself or whether it just happened, because adversity just happens sometimes, even to big deals like me. And I can walk through that sober by depending on these simple actions. I don't have to drink and I don't have to act like a huge lunatic. I can be an asset in the adversity instead of a big liability. Oh, there's the big baby, you know. Not only is everything terrible, but there's the baby. We need to look after him as well. And then, you know, it says burn the idea. And, you know, I'm like, again, it's very difficult when the guy's got it in his head that it's a good idea to take a restaurant job where he's going to be working 7 nights a week and can't go to meetings. It's very difficult to argue with that. So you know what? I don't argue anymore. I'm just like, well, you're probably not going to be able to go to any meetings and you could well get drunk. And he's like, yeah, but this job's great. And I'm like, okay, we'll still be here when you come back. You know, so I'm a big believer in letting people have their own experience. Because I don't know about you, but I don't like anybody telling me what to do. My experience with other alcoholics like me is they're going to do exactly what they want anyway. And if I tell them not to do it, then they're going to be peed off at me and they're not going to come back when it all blows up in their face and say, they're not going to come back and say, well, you were right and I was wrong. So I'm just like, yeah, yeah, that sounds good. Sounds like a good idea. Tell me how that works out.
Yeah, I consistently find that, because I really have a strong desire not to drink anymore. I really don't want to drink anymore. And I am convinced in the depths of my soul that I cannot stay sober and happy by myself. That is part of my consciousness. So, calamity seems to be much better for my recovery life than prosperity. When adversity and calamity are on, man, I'm going to 3 meetings a day. I am burning up the telephone. I'm wearing my sponsor out. I'm wearing my knees out. I'm in almost constant conscious contact with God. God help me. God help me. God help me. It's prosperity that's really very seductive, you know, when I start doing good. You know, when I start doing good, I think pretty highly of myself. And when I think pretty highly of myself, I don't really have a strong opinion about you guys. It's not very good. AA sort of becomes an option at that point, you know. And I absolutely lived that out. It was a slow burn. It was like a 10-year burn for me. Of just slowly pulling away from Alcoholics Anonymous, because when I got here, I was young and I didn't have anything. I didn't accumulate anything. I had debt when I got here, you know, that I wasn't paying on time. So there wasn't anything. I had a job that gave me a car, and that was the only thing that I could point to that had any value at all, and materially, because I had pushed everyone away. You know, I never lost much. I gave a lot away. You know, I pushed a lot out the door. I walked away from a lot. You know, I quit jobs. I quit relationships. I'm done. I don't like the game. I'm out. So anyway, I came to AA, and that stuff started coming to me. You know, I started showing up at work. I started getting promoted at work. I kind of fell upstairs, you know, without even meaning to. You know, would you like to take over the branch office in Newport News, David? And AA gave me the courage to say, "Well, yes, I will." You know, and suddenly I'm a big deal. And then the pretty little wife comes along, and all I ever wanted was a son, and one, two, three came along. 3 boys. I'm in high cotton now. Checkbook's good. Business drops in my lap. Again, I had the courage to say yes because of AA. And I start to prosper. All the while, I'm just leaking away from AA. So I've spent a lot of time going after. There's many terms for this, but the only palatable one for the room is the money and the honey. We call it, you know, the sex and checks. That's another one. That'll work too. But I've spent a lot of time meditating on these things. And chasing these things and protecting these things and pursuing these things and being jealous of guarding these things and so forth and having a lot of... So I understand what it's like to be consumed with the sex and the checks. The alcoholic clamors for this and that, and it really is interesting when you're working with somebody, and you've sat down, and maybe you've agreed that we're going to do the steps, and we're going to sketch out a plan. You're going to go to 4 or 5 meetings this week. You're going to join a home group. You're going to look for people that you can welcome into the meeting. Try to be useful to other people. Look for ways to be of service. Why don't you read, you know, the first pages of the doctor's opinion? We could discuss all that, and then a week goes by and you sit down with that same guy and it's like, how's it going? Well, the money. Well, the honey. Well, the boss. Well, the blah, 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 blah. You know, and it goes on and on. So we go back to keeping the ball on the deck once again. Well, what about the things that we talked about last week? How's your meeting attendance? What's your prayer life like? Did you read that, the doctor's opinion, by the way? Oh, yeah. I read it. I get it. You know, it's such a challenge to keep the focus on what we're trying to do. You know, and I just flat out tell people that I work with, if I ever give you any relationship advice, if I ever give you any financial advice, I want you to shoot me in the face. Because nobody has screwed those things up more than I have. So, it's hard when you're like me. I don't know about anybody else in this room. Maybe you're like me. Maybe you're also burdened with the gift of insight. You can see exactly what they need to do and why they need to do it, and it's almost irresistible to articulate that. So to just keep this thing down to, and I think when he talks about burning the idea to the consciousness of every man he can get, well, regardless, job or no job, wife or no wife, the money, the honey, sex and the checks, doesn't matter what those things are, the only conditions being required that you trust God and clean house. For me, I interpret that as the first 11 steps. That's it. Trust God, clean house, help others is the 12th step. But if you're willing to do the first 11 steps, I'm willing to help you. You know, it's like when you're sitting down at a fifth step. I tell people today, I'm like, if you're willing to write it, I'm willing to hear it. Okay. But like this whole business of like, this is what I wrote, right? And before I tell it, I'm going to give you the backstory. Okay. I'm in Texas. Okay. And the reason I went to Texas is because I'm just like over there. Oh God, I'm dying. If you're willing to write it, I'm willing to hear it. If you ain't writing it, I don't want to hear it. That's not what I meant to say, but I'm going to pass it back to Graham.
Okay, we're still on page 98, and we're down the bottom of the last paragraph. Now the domestic problem. Page 98. Now the domestic problem. There may be divorce, separation, or just strained relations. When your prospect has made such reparation as he can to his family and has thoroughly explained to them the new principles by which he is living, he should proceed to put those principles into action at home. That is, if he is lucky enough to have a home. Though his family be at fault in many respects, he should not be concerned about that. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. Argument and fault-finding are to be avoided like the plague. In many homes, this is a difficult thing to do, but it must be done if any results are to be expected. If persisted in for a few months, the effect on a man's family is sure to be great. The most incompatible people discover they have a basis upon which they can meet. Little by little, the family may see their own defects and admit them. These can then be discussed in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness. So we're moving now to taking the principles. It talks about in step 12 that we'll practice these principles in all our affairs. And is that not the main principle, probably, of the whole AA program? Argument and fault-finding are to be avoided like the plague. I want you to imagine, like, if David had the plague. Like, if he actually had it, I would be out that door. I'd be pushing John next to him so I could get over. Seriously, avoid it like the plague. That's pretty strong language, you know. So, that's one of my huge defects, is I want to argue and tell you how you're not treating me right and how you just need to get with the program to make me happy right now. And it tells me that I mustn't do that. I must really avoid that at all costs. So, again, notice that it doesn't say there may be divorce, separation, strained relations, or everybody's really happy. That's not an option there. It's like one of those three. So which one is it? And, you know, I haven't drank for years, and we have strained relations at times. It's usually because of me. Usually because I don't even realize that the selfishness has come back and I'm starting to judge again inside my mind. It's my hobby, judging you, and here's a list of reasons that you suck. And I'll just meditate on it. I might not say anything to you, but I'll give you a look across the room. I know what you're up to. So, you know, and then it talks about how, you know, the reality is if I just step back from myself and my obsession with me and how I'm right all the time and all my judgments of you and my life and the situation, if I just take a step back and look at my life, I really suffer from a warped perception of what my life is like. How I perceive my life and how my life really is two different things. And that's the beauty of, on a daily basis, talking to other sober men in AA. Because what it does is it refocuses me on the reality of my life. And the reality of my life today is my life has never, ever, ever been anywhere near as good as it is today. But ask me today if my life's good, and I'll be like, this job's terrible. I don't know how I ended up married to her, living in this city with those bloody kids. They're killing me. And that, it can be on any given day, that can be my perception of how my life is. But it's not even true. And the wonderful thing about this is that by continuing to come here and talk to people on a daily basis about what's going on in my mind, I'm more and more able to keep my big mouth shut and not communicate any of that verbally to people that it would hurt. And instead just to take it offline and process it and be refocused on the fact. And the great reality is that sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, I've really had a great life. And I think I can continue to do so. That a great life doesn't mean that I'm happy every day and everything's the way I would want it. That doesn't mean it's not great. And then finally, it talks again about being helpful and friendly. That's quite a concept for me to get my head around. So I'm supposed to be helpful and friendly to my wife and children.
Wow.
Because it tells me earlier on in the book that that's the way I'm supposed to be in general with the new guy, to be helpful and friendly. That's really what I'm supposed to be doing. So those are two words that I can think about in my morning meditation. How can I be helpful to my wife, and am I being friendly to my wife? Is it friendly when I come into the house with a scowl on my face, you know, looking around like that? Or maybe I could try smiling. Hi, nice to see you. How are you doing? Did you have a good day? You know, maybe show some affection. So try to be friendly instead of this. Everybody's like, uh-oh, here he comes. Is he in a good mood or a bad mood?
Yeah. I find it a little presumptive that he just assumes there's a domestic problem. I'm over here happy, joyous, and free. So, it talks about, I love the line, though his family may be at fault in many respects, those kind of lines always suck me in. I'm like, oh, good. Yeah, he gets me. He should not be concerned about that. Oh, and then I just crestfallen at that information. Thought he was going to give me some pointers on how to bring this up with her. He goes on to say that David should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. Argument and fault finding are to be avoided like the plague. And yeah, and if you've got that laser sharp crystal wit like me, where you can absolutely hone in on exactly what you're doing wrong, I tend to do that with the people that I'm closest to the most, you know. And my wife certainly is has heard my rendition of where she's coming up short many times. But on the other hand, I have experience also practicing these principles in my home. I have experience of, before I turn the key in the door, just saying a little prayer that I can go in and be helpful to these people, and walk in through over the threshold with an attitude of being of love and of service to these people. Just that simple, what does that take? About 6 seconds to pull that off? Absolutely changes the environment, at least the environment that I'm bringing in, which may be a perfectly happy environment, you know, until I get home. I've been thinking about you people. I've got some valuable information to share. My God, man. So, but when I am doing that, when I am aware that that's my purpose, to be of love and service to these people, and to come in and have the ability to admit that I'm wrong. I mean, I had that happen today. I bit my 8-year-old's face off last night verbally, because I'd just gotten frustrated. I just had it up to here. There was one straw too many. I was like, just get out of this room. But just get out of here. Go. And then I thought, and I saw his face. He was just absolutely like, I'd punched him in the stomach, you know. But I was still mad. So I was able to, that's his tough luck. He should have listened to me in the first place, you know. So at least today, I was able to stop and I finally asked him some questions. I picked him up from school. I was like, "How was your day? What could you have done better? You know, were you kind and loving toward all people?" And he actually told me, he thought about it for a second. He goes, "There's absolutely nothing I could have done better today." I was like, "Good on you, mate." But I got to tell you, last night I lost my patience with you, and Daddy was frustrated, and I yelled, and I shouldn't have, and I apologize, you know, it's bothered me all day. So that's not because I'm a good guy. You guys gave me that 10-step tool to use, you know. And when I'm avoiding argument and fault-finding with my wife, and I've also found an extraordinary thing. When she's talking, I don't have to solve everything that comes out of her mouth. I don't have to criticize everything that comes out of her mouth. I can say things like, oh, that must have been really difficult. Oh, yeah, I know what that's like to be frustrated. Wow. Is there anything I could do to help you with that? Just listen? Okay. Yeah, I can do that. You know, I've been able to practice those things. And then when I'm coming to her with my fault, I'd like to apologize for raising my voice, saying what I said yesterday, being critical. I was in a bad mood. I was frustrated. I was upset. I was worried about the money, and I took it out on you. And I had no business doing that. You know, I apologize for my behavior. If I'm bringing that to the table over and over again in that atmosphere, I have heard things come out of her mouth as well. Like, hey, listen, I was just thinking of myself. I wasn't thinking about you, David. I had my own agenda, and I just steamrolled over the whole thing, and I expected you to just come along for the ride, and that was wrong, you know. And then I get to hear that, and I get to receive that, and I get to say, it's okay. You know, we can go forward in helpfulness and friendliness. So the tools are all given to us. I love the fact, I say this all the time to new people, it's like AA it's like your life is burned to the ground. There you are standing in the middle of this smoldering ash pile that is your life. And then AA just backs up beep, 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 with a whole dump truck full of tools. We're giving them all to you right now. I mean, you hear everything that you need in your first, you go to 30 meetings in 30 days, you've heard everything you need to hear to do what you need to do, right? It's like, here's all the tools. We know you don't know how to use them, but we can help you with that. So if I do pick up these tools and I do practice them in my home, which I have, I'm not trying to, I hope I'm not giving anybody the impression that I do it perfectly, because I absolutely don't, but I have done it and I have had occasion to practice it, and I have an experience of what my home and my life is like when I am trying to be of love and service to these people, trying to just listen, trying to be tolerant, trying to ask what I can do to help, and what my life is like then as well. Yeah, that's it.
Okay, we're going to go to page 100. And we're going to read the paragraph, Both You and the New Man, on page 100. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you'll presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. And, you know, this idea of spiritual progress, I don't like the word spiritual. I hated it when I came to AA. I really thought it just meant all the people in church that were idiots, in my opinion. And I didn't believe in God. And the remarkable thing is this, that having persisted with these simple actions that everybody in this room can understand, and just doing that reasonably consistently over time, my life has completely changed. And what happened is I went from being a guy that was a perpetrator of a lot of domestic violence, and over my time in AA, you know, the domestic violence was taken away when I came to AA, but gradually my relationships with the opposite sex got better, you know, and I've been able to be part of a marriage for 6 or 7 years now, you know, and so big improvements in that area, be able to be a parent, you know, somebody that didn't really, it wasn't that I didn't like children, they were just an annoyance, you know, they just took away from me being able to do what I wanted to do. That was my opinion of children. I was going to be a bachelor till I died. But, you know, having these wonderful little children and having an experience with them as well, and then, you know, in my professional life, being able to be more accountable and more disciplined in that area as well. So gradually over time, things have changed. I haven't really willed these changes into being, you know. The only reason I'm in this country is because I got fired from a job in Scotland. Very unexpectedly, I got kicked out. And that set in train a set of circumstances that ended up me coming here. So, you know, that didn't seem like it was a good thing at the time, though. It felt like it was a crushing blow that happened. So the bottom line is, I didn't really plan any of this. You know, I didn't plan to come to the States, etc., etc. But these things have happened nonetheless, and I've been able to do that. And there's been times in my life when my present circumstances have sucked a big one. You know, that probably the 2 or 3 occasions. You know, that time I lost my job in Scotland, and I just signed a mortgage, and I was in debt 2 years. You know, working, running up credit cards, not enough money to pay the bills, just and sober in AA and just thinking, why are you doing this to me, God? I've been a good boy in AA, you know, because I can never see what the plan really is. Another time, having a custody battle over my oldest son, going to court 5 times in 1 year, not able to sleep because I was so resentful at the people that did what they did to him. And then the latest one, my youngest son almost dying and getting brain damaged and all that and having seizures and all this stuff. And able to just walk through that stuff and just come to the meeting and just keep doing what we do. Talk to my sponsor, say some simple prayers and just hold the line. Keep the ball on the deck. We're just going to keep going. And these things all pass. And it's never as bad as I make it up to be anyway. It's all in my mind, you know, but it's remarkable how not just me, but lots of other people that are CNAA are able to take whatever comes down the pipe in life and just go walk through it safe, sane and sober and not acting like a huge idiot most of the time. Unless you're at a car dealership on the other end of the phone. there you go.
That paragraph opens up with both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. So it's a we thing, right? I mean, the first word and the first step, and we do this together. We can do together what we can't do apart, you know, all this stuff. I know what my life is like when I'm handling it. I know what that's like. And I know what my day is like when I'm handling it. And I know what my day is like when I get up in the morning and I say some simple prayers and I get on the phone and I talk to a few other alcoholics and make it to a meeting and do this thing with you guys, you know. I know what that's like. And then the new man has to take it on faith. If he persists, remarkable things will happen. And I think about myself too, because all I had was your example. All I had was the things that you guys were telling me, you know. And the only other thing I had was my own rearview mirror where I'd been last week, month, year. And I knew I didn't want to go back that way. And the way that you guys were going seemed pretty good, you know. And I share this all the time. I mean, I haven't had a drink in 23 years with on and off effort in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I wish I could tell you that that curve of recovery is just this smooth, beautiful, straight line up. But it's not. It's just this highs and lows, this jagged kind of lightning bolt shape with a general upward trend, you know, getting better, you know. But man, when it's high, it's high. And when it's low, you know, every time I'm on a downward spiral emotionally, I always think, ha ha, this is it. This is the end. It's like free falling out of a plane, you know. It's like, I don't believe there's going to be, yeah, okay, I'm all right. I'm all right. You know, that's the fate. But as I look back, that rather inefficient path, I mean, the business that I participate in today was a result of getting fired from a job, which was a terrible thing because I just had a newborn son, you know, and you know, I judged that to be terrible. The house that I live in today was a house that I got under duress, under the pain of separation and an imminent divorce that I was not happy about. And I really love that house. And we're all living under it, that roof now, you know. And so there's all these things that have happened as I look back. I definitely would not have planned them, you know, because some of them are hard. I'm not quick to sign up for anything difficult, you know. But so there are good times and there's hard times. I didn't plan them, but as I look back, I really enjoy my life today. I enjoy where I am. I enjoy the people. I enjoy what I'm doing and the people that I'm doing it with. And you guys helped me to be grateful for that instead of look at it as my birthright or my, you know. By God, you know, it ought to be this way for old Dave, you know. So, and then he follows with that last line there. Just that simple idea. No matter what your present circumstances, he puts an exclamation point on that. Once again, he just marginalizes my present circumstances. Yeah, you're rich, you're poor, you're in, whatever. You're living, it doesn't matter. Whatever your present circumstances, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about your spiritual life. We're talking about being able to recover from the disease of alcoholism and being able to help other people. Somehow we're gifted with the ability to help other people. You know, I'm not very good at a lot of things in my life, but and I don't know that I'm really that good at helping other people, but we seem to be able to, little by slowly.
Okay, we're going to read the last paragraph of the evening, and it starts right at the bottom of page 100. It just says, assuming we are spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to do. People have said we must not go where liquor is served, we must not have it in our homes, we must shun friends who drink, we must avoid moving pictures which show drinking scenes, we must not go into bars, our friends must hide their bottles if we go into their houses, we mustn't think or be reminded about alcohol at all. Our experience shows that this is not necessarily so. We meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. There is something the matter with his spiritual status. His only chance for sobriety would be someplace like the Greenland ice cap. And even there, an Eskimo might turn up with a bottle of scotch and ruin everything. Ask any woman who sent her husband to distant places on the theory he would escape the alcohol problem. And this is the remarkable thing about Alcoholics Anonymous. The first thing to say is that we're each free to decide what we want our relationship with alcohol to be in sobriety. And I've seen all sorts of people in AA, people who are under a siege mentality. It's us and them. I'm going to live out the rest of my life in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not going to go anywhere unless there's lots of people from AA there. And by the way, invite some of those people next time you have a party at your house with your family. And they'll go up to people that they don't even know you're in AA and start talking to them about the steps or alcoholism or this crazy thing they did when they were drunk. It's really comfortable. So this idea that you know, at the start, very, very, very one track I was on Alcoholics Anonymous. And I really just focused on AA almost exclusively. I had my job and I had AA. But gradually over time, in the first couple of years sober, I played in an Irish folk band. But I'm not Irish, by the way. But we used to play in bars. And the other people in the band would drink. And I obviously wasn't drinking. I was in AA. So, you know, the idea that I'm going to hide away from life because I can't drink alcohol, that's not what the literature suggests. If me or David or any of you want to do that, that's cool. It's not for me to say that's wrong. That's not where I'm coming from. But what it seems to be suggesting is I really get a second chance at life. I really get a second chance to live life and to do the things that I want to do, regardless of whether or not there's no alcohol there or tons of alcohol there. It really doesn't. It really should be of no consequence, provided I'm on solid spiritual footing. Now, see, I can take that paragraph I just read and I can say, come on, guys, let's go to the club. Yeah. And we're all out dancing at the nightclub or whatever, you know, and just going out every night clubbing and going to bars. That, I don't think that's what this is talking about. I think what it's talking about is that I need to just make sure that I'm taking care of the simple actions of Alcoholics Anonymous in my daily life. And then I can certainly go about and live a relatively normal life.
On 102, it pointed out, people read that paragraph and it's like, that's my ticket to the bar. But on 102, he tells us why we go to the bar. Your job is to be at a place where you can be of maximum helpfulness to others. So never hesitate to go anywhere if you can be helpful. You should not hesitate to visit the most sordid spot on earth on such an errand. Keep on the firing line of life with these motives, and God will keep you on hand. And what are the motives? To be of maximum helpfulness to others. So I absolutely believe I can go anywhere and do anything if I put the actions of Alcoholics Anonymous first. That I can tell you a million stories out of my experience that would justify that position. But we are out of time. So I'm going to pass the seventh tradition basket. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. And are there any announcements for the good of AA?
12th anniversary of the Jason Alcoholic, 12th anniversary of the depot meeting, January 13th. All dessert starts at 6. See me after the meeting if you need more info.
Thanks, Jason.
Okay, mark your calendars for January 14th. There's flyers out on the table. We're going to have here that Monday night supper and a speaker, 6 p.m. We're going to have a potluck. 7 p.m., Rich B. is coming down from Ocean City, Maryland. He's got an absolutely hair-raising, wonderful story of recovery. It's one of those stories where you sit and you listen to it and you think, oh my God, I hope he's going to be all right. And obviously he is. Okay. Any other announcements?
Sorry, what was that date? 14?
January 14th, 6 p.m. potluck, 7 p.m. speaker. There are flyers out by the coffee. Feel free to take them back to your home groups too and help us to invite the community to that event. We're very excited about it. Anybody else? Got anything going on? All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. There is literature available. We've got big books for sale. There's other literature out on the coffee table. Please see myself or any other home group member after the meeting if you'd like a book. And not to embarrass anyone, but just so we can get to know you better, is there anybody in the room tonight in their first 30 days? If we could just get your first name.
Hey, Kevin, welcome.
Welcome. Anybody else? All right. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. That's who you see. Thank you all for coming out tonight. And after we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. All are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at
Bella Pizza.
Bella Pizza. And is anyone inspired to read the last two paragraphs on page 164?
Sure.
Hi, Ryan.
Yes, our book is meant to be suggestive, although we realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God, admit your faults to him and to your fellows, clear away the wreckage of your past, give freely of what you find, and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thanks, Ryan.
Amen. All right. Step one, Christmas Eve. Step one on New Year's Eve.
You'll see.
Adina, would you lead us?
Us, and lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the